Please be ready to share the title, location, and general condition of your car. This information assists the tow company in scheduling appropriate towing arrangements. Again, the number is 855-KPFT-CAR to make your donation. Thanks. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to the show, the thing that we like to call Technology Blitzin'.
Welcome.
Do we? Are we doing this now?
Wow. New format.
German,
Das Technology Chompin'.
Chompin'
Bites.
All right. Where is this coming from? I like to consider myself at least willing to understand. All right. He potted the music down early and did that. Flick that is exercising whatever control he feels he has, which is total, until he goes to sleep.
That never happens.
Can I post that picture on the web, or is that too much face?
No, I think it's okay.
Okay. All right, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flickton.
Flixen Gruber.
Heisa Lee.
Hi, Lee.
Hello.
I honestly don't know what's going on tonight.
Are we doing this in German? Because I'm down with that. Is that cool?
Is it? I don't know. The show is already...
Yeah, I got tickets for Kraftwerk.
Did you get me a ticket?
Yes.
Ooh!
I have three tickets to Kraftwerk in Austin.
Now I was going to ask you if you managed to get them. Did you get them the day they went on sale?
Yes, I did. They sold out in like a couple of minutes.
How come I didn't... Did that happen?
I tweeted it.
I did not see the tweet.
I guess
tweet.
You don't notice me.
I try to notice
so many followers.
I tweet so often.
And I pay strict attention to people who tweet at me.
Yeah, it was the 13th anniversary of the existence of Failure.net. And I got tickets to Kraftwerk, which I've wanted to see forever, and they're playing in Austin. And I got to go to Treebeard's for lunch. So it was just like an all-around awesome day.
Now is the time on Technology Bites when we dance.
And go to Treebeard's.
And go to Treebeard's.
Okay, so you tweeted it, but you didn't at me.
No.
Bro, do you even Twitter?
Man, well, so all I got to do now is make sure I can go. When is it? When are we going?
September the 25th, I think.
Okay.
Make sure to wear your black sweaters.
I figured it was, it's worth the money just to have the ticket if there's only a remote chance I can go.
Well, evidently the scalpers were going crazy on prices and stuff. But so they have 12 dates that they're doing in the U.S.
Right.
And all tickets for all cities went on sale at the same time on the same day. And
are they coming to Houston?
No, Austin. No,
Austin. Come and see Houston.
No, nine. I could play.
No, Austin is only Texas date.
Well, they were
now. It's been too long. Do we know if they're the same show in all cities?
I would assume so because it's a 3D concert, so you get 3D glasses. And aren't they in 3D in
real life though?
They're really only doing one concert and just broadcasting it to all. That's all holograms.
Because the thing is, they also do another series called Retrospective, they call it the Catalog, because they remastered a few years ago. They remastered 8 of their albums, not the first 3, I think, but like their last 8 albums. They remastered them, re-released them, and so they did a tour. And like 3 years ago is the first time they played in the U.S. in a while, and they did it specifically for this, and they did a show at MoMA in New York, Modern Art, right?
And they did it.
It was $20 for a ticket, and yeah, it was each
show
night
was a different album.
And I tried to get tickets for that when they went on sale, but they were like gone in a second or two, so I didn't get them. And then they played Ultra Music Festival in 2013, I think, or maybe 14. I didn't go to that. That was in Florida. So I think they had 5 dates, and then they added more. So they've got 12 dates in the U.S. now. All the tickets went on sale. And evidently, Austin and Miami sold out really, really fast because Kraftwerk added a second show on the same night in those 2 cities. So the second show went on sale, I think, this past Friday. And I don't know if it's sold out or not, but I know when I looked to see just if I could get a better seats, when I went to buy tickets for the pre-sale, which was like a day before they went on general sale, the seats I got were like 2 rows in front of where I was, which is pretty far in the back. So,
jeez.
But it is orchestra level. It's not in the balconies.
It's going to be great.
I think it will be awesome.
Yeah, some of these bands have been around
so long.
Das
ist gut.
Das ist sehr gut.
Some of these bands have been around so long that it kind of makes sense. Multiple concerts. Bad Religion did paired concerts where they do 2 nights, and 1 night was the old stuff. Basically the first half of their career, and then the second night was the second half, so that basically anybody who came upon them new could either go see the stuff they'd missed or come and see the stuff they
knew.
See, I'm thinking it's going to be mostly like, you know, a lot of old nerds, but it's also going to be like people that are into like avant-garde music, because from the early days they really were, you know. Some nihilists.
Are these guys going to hurt us?
How could she not have a ticket? She gave up her toe.
And
no, Donnie, these men are basically cowards.
Say what you will about the tenets of National Socialism, at least it is an ethos.
It's over the line, Sparky.
Well, that's
a league game.
That's I haven't had this kind of joy in a while. I'm very happy. Thank you, Flickton. I will pay you back whatever it costs, and you can make up the price. I have no idea how much these tickets were. But I do have access to the internet, but I also have apathy. So
tickets cost $1 million. His girlfriend gave up her toe.
It will cost you a rose petal and an empty cup. All right. Well, welcome to Technology Bites. We're going to go see Kraftwerk. And remember, you can't spell Kraftwerk without twerk.
Yeah, you know what? That's right. Twerk. Yeah.
They're the original twerkers.
It's good. It's not. No, dozens of stunned Kraftwerk fans attend Miley Cyrus 3D concert.
When they said it was twerk, I thought it was just an abbreviation.
All right, well, we're glad you could tune in. I want to thank everybody who participated the last 3 weeks in the fundraiser.
And this is week 4, so here we go.
Especially those that called in or webbed in and made a pledge online or on the phone. We made our goal all 3 weeks. Ian, especially, very helpful with his matching pledges. But everybody else who pledged whatever they could, everything is greatly appreciated. We want to remind you, if you did put that on, like, you know, a promise to pay and you get your invoice, please do make that payment. But it was very nice to make our goal all 3 weeks, and we really do appreciate our audience. Groovehouse is out this week. He is doing a paying gig, so he has to take those when he has the opportunity.
Lame.
Yeah, I know. His I find his level of commitment.
Come on,
disturbing.
Rush tours all the time.
Lame.
Well, you know, I saw Rush a lot. He's going to photograph the Rush concert. When I saw Rush back in the 80s, Count Floyd introed them. Ooh, listen to that
oh,
music.
Because they were
it's
doing,
so scary.
And that was when they were doing the Great White North.
Great White North, yeah. They were tied up with the SCTV people.
I saw them at
people.
The Texas Jam. The roof of the dome was coming off. Ozzy Osbourne was there in those days when he kind of didn't care at all.
The dark period.
Yes.
He was still on drugs, but not really quite MTV famous anymore.
Yeah, he showed up and 38 Special, right in the middle of all that, and then Rush, you know, and Rush had an album out and nobody knew. It's like, you know, I listened to the rock station. How come I didn't know
that? I did not know that Groovehouse was a Ditto head, though. Going to see Rush.
That's not right. That's the other Rush. I don't like his music nearly as much.
It's kind of lame.
Can't dance to it.
Have you ever heard the Rush Limbaugh song? We can't play it on the air, but sometime I'll. They took his voice and made a song out of it, kind of like when they did George H.W. Bush, you know, We Will Rock You, where you take all the stuff out of their speeches and you get the words right.
I'm sure it was made with dignity and respect.
Yeah, no.
Et cetera.
Sometime after the show, remind me and I'll play it for
you. Always time on sprockets when we twerk. All right.
Twerk, 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 twerk.
Man, I'm so excited. I can't tell you. All right. So anyway, welcome to the show. Barrett is also out tonight. He is in Italy. He's riding around on motorcycles and luxury cars and drinking wine.
He's dead to me at this point.
Oh, man. Yeah. Visiting with all kinds of cool Italian mellow people. And
having good food.
Having a great time. He's not going to come back.
he's in Italy
until all those motorcycles he's riding start breaking down, and then he'll.
Once he's exhausted
back.
The supply of Italian motorcycles to
Vespa
rent.
Supply collapses in Italy, you'll know Barrett is then on his way home.
Yeah, well, he'll be back hopefully next week. I saw him in the IRC. I don't know if he's. There he is. Not enough bandwidth to stream the show, but enough to hang out in IRC. When are you coming back?
Wow, it makes the show international this way. You're kind of, it's like he's here, sort of.
Hey, Barrett, fax me a pizza. All right, so we got Peter Hughes in the studio. We've got two missing geeks, but it's going to be a great evening. We hope you stick around and hang out with Technology Bites. And we're going to now take time to do the Technology Bites info shot live in the studio with Peter Hughes.
It's the Technology Bites info shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
All right. Well, as always, you know, I'm going to see how many weeks in a row we can have some kind of server exploit hackery thing. And actually, there's two of them, but one of them is a bigger deal, so it's later. There actually is now a new threat to HTTPS protected connections. That's putting them at risk. The vulnerability named by the researchers as logjamming. Oh, wait, no, that's from the Big Lebowski. Logjam is a flaw that affects the Diffie-Hellman key exchange, the cryptographic algorithm that protects HTTPS, SSH, SMTPS, and others use that to secure connections between the server and the browser. So, you know, when the little – or now we'll put this for our more elementary listeners at home. You know when the little lock appears in the corner of your browser window? That's HTTPS, and this affects when the server is trying to do that to you. And it's supposed to be secure, but logjam can effectively allow an attacker to use a man-in-the-middle attack to access encrypted traffic.
We need like a little Michael Jackson clip that says, I'm talking about the man in the middle whenever you say that.
So basically what it does is it forces the connection down to a lower grade. When the connection starts, basically there's a negotiation for what level of encryption the connection should have. And the vulnerability forces it down to export-grade cryptography, and in turn makes the encrypted data more easily readable because it's you can decrypt that a lot quicker. It's very similar to the recent Freak attack, but it is different. This attacks the Diffie-Hellman key exchange instead of an RSA key exchange and is due to a flaw in the TLS protocol instead of an implementation vulnerability. If you don't understand what any of that is, you don't have to. Just know that it's not the same one that you heard about a few weeks ago. It's a new one about the same basic thing. According to the researchers, about 8.4% of the top million domains using HTTPS are vulnerable to logjam, with POP3S and IMAP-S vulnerable in 8.9% and 8.4% of cases, respectively. It's advised to Internet users that they upgrade their browser with Safari, Internet Explorer, Firefox, and Chrome updates being deployed, while server owners need to disable support for external cipher suites and generate a unique 2048-bit Diffie-Hellman group, as well as upgrading to the latest version of OpenSSH. As before, Ars Technica notes that the issue is partly caused by export restrictions that were put in place in the 90s so that government agencies could break encryption used in other countries. So it's one of those where, making other people not safe and opening backdoors in their stuff doesn't make the rest of us safer. It means that it opens the door for people to get us. It's suggested by the researchers that the attack can be used to downgrade connections on 80% of servers using DHE export with a common 512-bit prime, and though an academic team would be able to defeat a 768-bit prime, it's thought that a nation state could break a 1024-bit prime. If someone did, breaking the single most common 1024-bit prime used by web servers could allow eavesdropping on connections to 18% of the top million HTTPS domains, while a second prime could allow for passive decryption of 66% of VPN servers and 26% of SSH servers. If left unpatched, logjam could be a potential goldmine for government agencies performing online surveillance. So if you really believe in keeping your stuff secure, you need to do the updates and upgrades. You should be searching that. If your server guy doesn't know about this stuff,
you get a new server
first
guy.
Smack him and then make him read up on it and fix it. Of course, yeah, I don't know. They don't go into detail about whether this, what platforms, if any, are particularly affected by it, but if you're running servers and you want secure connections, you should look into it. In other news, Google Plus is kind of foundering, and one of the new things is that's changed is apparently it is losing one of its best features. A report from Bloomberg claims that Google's close to revamping its photo service and will, quote, probably launch the new product at Google I.O. It's Google Plus Photos, which ships with every Google Play Android device and automatically backs up pictures to Google Cloud Storage. Bloomberg says the new photo service will no longer be a part of Google Plus, though, and so Photos is going to be changed to integrate with other social networks, letting users post their photos to Facebook and Twitter. Google Plus Photos also recently integrated with Google Drive, allowing users to easily download their photos on a desktop computer. So, bad news for Google Plus, good news for using Google's photo features with other social media. And then now, here's new decade, new crimes. Apparently, if you got a Toyota Prius, you need to change out the screws, put in secure non-stealable screws on your battery pack because it started in San Francisco, but who knows when it's going to spread. Car thieves smashed the rear windows of the Prius, cut through the connecting wires to the battery, and then pulled the 150-pound battery pack out of the car and it takes about 20 minutes, and then they put it on Craigslist and sell it for around $1,000. Which, given that the replacement battery costs you about $2,500, is why there's a market and why people are stealing them. So, if you're a Prius-type person, you got one, you may want to get you want to replace the 12 millimeter bolts that are on the battery pack. It's in the in the back. You want to replace those with tamper-proof bolts. That won't stop the thieves from smashing your windows and damaging your upholstery to get at it, but at least you won't be dropping $2,500 on a new battery. If you have a Tesla, the reason you probably don't have to worry about somebody stealing your battery is because the Model S battery weighs about 1,000 pounds.
Correct.
So unless you see 20 guys milling around your car, you're probably okay.
It's also a stressed structural member, so you can't really remove it.
Well, that's true, too. But just the weight thing, they can't even drag it off. And then this story we found by taking a 4K image, and we zoomed in on the reflection of a mirror in an eyeball, and then we rotated it 75 degrees
enhanced
on the horizontal plane and enhanced. And we found that CSI Cyber flicked its favorite CSI ever, uses hilariously absurd technobabble. There's an article in Wired.com talking about it. In only 2 short months, it says, CSI Cyber has quickly become one of the most magnificently absurd police procedurals being aired by a major television network. They say, to be fair, it's mostly a matter of circumstance. It's about as brain dead as any other CSI series. But this is especially bad because it was ostensibly designed specifically to follow technology-related fictional crimes. At the center of the proceedings is Avery Ryan, an FBI psychologist played by Patricia Arquette. I don't know if she also sees dead people in this one or if that stopped after Medium, but she surrounded herself with a band of forensic technologists, adventurous geeks, and recently reformed white hacker types. So if they're reformed white hacker types, white hat hacker types, does that mean that now they're black hats? Or shouldn't it be reformed black hats?
I suppose you could say that they've had a change of hat.
Where'd you get those sunglasses from? The teenagers of Dawson's Creek may have been verbally precocious, but the experts on cyber, which ended its first season this week, often don't seem to know what they're talking about, even while they're still talking. Let's see. For the sake of all future mainstream media properties in which tech literacy will presumably play an increasing role, it's time for someone to call shenanigans. So they called out some of them.
I will have to say that I've never watched CSI Cyber, and nor do I want to, but I still bet you anything that Patricia Arquette was more believable in Medium than she was. And I loved Medium. That was a great show. The suspension of disbelief was great, but this is like less believable.
This is a bridge too far. You can believe she sees dead people and is psychic, but it's at Wired.com. You can go to geekradio.com, and we have links to all the articles and sources for the show tonight, so you can like rush ahead of us and know what we're going to talk about beforehand. In one of the videos, they crack a password by first having a former child rapper repeat nursery rhymes and then taking a single wild guess based on the bad guy's tattoos. Yeah, I know that's how I base that's how we guess Flicted's passwords. No, anyway, that's a common narrative fudge in many other television and film productions, which apparently have no idea how to work around with the increasingly sophisticated security mechanisms of the real world. Obviously, nobody on these TV shows uses SSH keys for authentication. They always have to have a password.
Two-factor. We've got the X factor.
Let's see. The second episode of Cyber introduced an incredibly efficient new construct. At the start of every show is the Who's I Can See for Miles. I guess the CSI thing is use a Who song.
Yeah.
Fades away. A new piece of technical terminology appears with a dictionary-style definition, which sets the stage for the rest of the episode. By introducing a concept that would be too awkward to define during the course of the script, no matter how low the bar seems to
be. Like Tracer T.
I don't think they've gotten to the Tracer T virus. The glossary entries make for brief and fairly smooth interludes. But one day it might be nice to see them actually used as informational tools instead of just turning every installment into a sort of very special episode for Luddites. let's see. They
this week on a very special episode of CSI Cyber.
They like to superimpose screens over the corner of the screen so you can see what they're seeing while they're doing it, which is kind of odd. And then mediocre metaphors. I love that. You know, it used to be when you cracked into a system, you had to navigate a 8-bit maze with a dragon in it on your green screen
while wearing VR gloves.
It looks like they're running Spanning Tree. Can you hack into their TCP port?
Defining a
no, but if they are, I can plug in this Ethernet cable to this other port on the switch, and we'll totally have to do a Spanning Tree recalculation. Then we can break in.
CSI Cyber defines a botnet as, quote, a network of computers used for evil. Wow, Grandma, really? And that's about as sophisticated as it gets. At one point, a character actually has an excruciatingly detailed summary of the Trojan War in order to explain to the audience just what Trojan horse malware is. See, they take the malware and they put it in the wooden horse and they roll it up outside your house and wait.
Sounds legit.
So,
totally legit.
Yes. They tried to blow up a printer using flawed firmware. They show the printer's firmware flash up on the screen, but it's HTML from a web page.
In the real world, you have to get firmware to keep your printer from blowing up.
apparently, their thing is if you watch CSI Cyber, if you found it like technologically informative, if you watch it with somebody who knows what they're doing, they're probably going to start laughing in it. Because whenever you show code, I mean, at least you do the like Matrix thing where there's not real characters so you can't actually read it. Instead, they basically viewed source on a web page and called it code. They also use some pseudocode. They give an unholy mishmash of practices from Java, Ruby, Bash, and others, which once again appears to be embedded in an HTML page because apparently compiling the on-screen props for the show consisted of Googling the phrase, what does code look like, and then using the resulting page of search results itself the answer.
This is encrypted XML.
So,
hack the Gibson.
So if you want to hear some funny technology fail and we're not on that night, you can always watch this show. Oh, the other thing apparently is one of them says is all I got is green code here, because apparently the like malware shows up in red on their screens.
Oh yeah,
as it does in real life.
That's because they installed the right Vim syntax filter for that. So it had all the keywords preset.
Oh, there's malware, says one of the good guys as the evil red code starts to scroll into view. I guess I must say, as you know, and I'm no forensics guy or any of that, but I've had servers compromised, and so I've gone through the logs to figure out what's going on, and obviously that would make really crummy television watching somebody.
They discuss that, you know, and when you talk about trying to show technology on the screen, real technology.
It's really not exciting.
It's boring.
It's really not exciting at all.
Yeah, and watching somebody hack isn't nearly as exciting as it was in Swordfish.
It's like, watch this. Well, yeah. What is real?
Where is Halle Berry when you need her? Or a couple of floozies that...
Now.
Sitting, but watching somebody sit there with Nmap for 20 minutes trying different port scans is just not terribly exciting.
So,
I mean, unless you're into that, then it's pretty awesome, actually.
The thing you would think, though, is in this day and age, that the majority of people who are of an age that would be producing television would have a better idea of what technology does and come up with better
analogies. No, the job is to entertain, and it's easy to do it in a flashy you know, easy to understand way.
Well, it's probably also cheaper to like set up the fake, you know, this, look at this powerful setup because it's got four screens or whatever, you know, that are just playing YouTube videos.
Have you seen the Two Idiots, One Keyboard video? If anyone listening, if you haven't, go to YouTube and search for Two Idiots, One Keyboard. It's a clip from one of these shows, possibly NCIS. I think it actually is NCIS.
Oh, yeah, it's NCIS. Yes, absolutely.
And it's Tattoo Girl and Moron Guy, and they're like there's like hacking going on, and she's all like, oh my God, they're getting through the firewall, and like Moron Guy like comes up next to her and he starts typing on the keyboard too, and they're like two people both typing on the same keyboard being like, quick, reroute the router so it goes through and reinforces the firewall. Oh, he's so fast, this code is so quick. And yeah, it's painful.
Faster than a speeding dumbass.
Yeah. Two Idiots, One Keyboard. YouTube it.
Well, into real future stuff, this one, I hadn't really thought about the possibility of somebody doing this, but someone's come up with it, and I think that it's one of those things that may be the future. Spotify has been chipping away at the problem of choice for years now. You know, when you have instant access to basically almost every album that's out there, at some point you cross over from that being a perk to being a hindrance, where how do you find anything? Apparently, in its latest effort to expose people to new music and find the things they want, involves building automatic playlists. That's not the big thing, based on time of day and mood. Not unlike Google and RDO, but apparently Spotify is not limiting itself to music.
Does it ask you how you're feeling?
The company announced it's going to be adding podcasts and video content to its platform. So you start getting to where all that kind of multimedia content that's out on the internet starts being available as part of the mix.
Ooh, maybe soon they'll get to pay the cheaper rates that SiriusXM pays for licensing music.
There you go. Well, and so they're tied. They've got deals with all kinds of TV networks and stuff like that. I don't know. The thing to me is like podcasts, some of the best ones are long form. So I don't know how you know, it's kind of going to break your rhythm on your morning when it's like, you know, you hear, I don't know, Farrell's Happy. And then the next thing is a 2-hour podcast on all
technology.
All the offenses of CSI Cyber.
Well, if you peruse the log files of geekradio.com and look at all the IPs that are pulling down our podcasts, there's a lot that are in China and so forth that are just scanning the whole directory and pulling down everything. Just scraping it all. So we exist, you know, in some Chinese hoarding server.
In some North Korean gulag, they're making four idiots try to sound like us. We're American! What is this cyber?
Let's look that up. Whoa!
Cyber. No.
Do not tell great leader.
I gave that up after Goetze.
Two somethings and a something.
So, yeah. Anyways. Okay. So apparently the there's more to – and Spotify, the other thing that they're doing besides serving up news and music catered to your morning drive to work – their app is now can also use your phone's sensors to detect the pace of your run if you were jogging and deliver music perfectly matched to the tempo of your feet. So that means if you're walking to work and then two, like, you know, shady looking dudes are chasing you to mug you, the music that plays in your headphones will be perfectly
matched.
Like
something from like one of the Bourne trilogy
to your panic rush through the streets of the city. But it's just interesting that they're certainly making they're putting together lots of different sources, and they're finding ways to integrate them to make them more useful that are beyond just the, hey, let's gather all the metadata about everyone everywhere and then serve them ads that they like. So one has to wonder in the future if that's and I think the who should be the most worried about this kind of approach is like morning radio programs, because what happens when you put together a mix of interesting little humorous anecdotes, news, and music that's tailored to what you're doing at the time
and not offensive,
and sounds to me like the morning zoo's got a problem. So, and then finally our top story, we talked about this conceptually a few weeks ago, and now apparently somebody, part of how it, somebody actually had done it. I don't think they did it in response to the reports. I think this guy had some ideas ahead of time. Basically, this researcher, Chris Roberts, had supposedly he admitted to hacking a plane in flight and causing it to climb. He overwrote code on the thrust management computer, according to the affidavit and search warrant, and made an airliner that he was in climb because basically he increased the thrust, and so you do that and the plane is going to rise.
Because physics.
This was filed in a federal court in New York State and was first published last Friday by APTN, a Canadian news site. Supposedly, Chris Roberts told the FBI that he, quote, connected to other systems on the airplane network after he exploited, gained access to, or, quote, hacked. They put hack quote marks around the hacked. Mm-hmm. The in-flight entertainment system. He stated that he then overwrote code on the airplane's thrust management computer while aboard a flight, and that he successfully commanded the system he had access to issue the climb command. Oh, so it was farther than that. He didn't just increase the thrust. He basically told the plane to climb.
Okay, so I'm no embedded systems designer, and I recognize that clearly there are complicated issues when doing systems design of a set of systems so complicated as an aircraft. But why would you have like the Wi-Fi where the passengers sit in any way, shape, or form
touch the
like actual avionics of the aircraft?
Two purposes, one network.
Well, and why, you know, it's kind of you built the plane. So okay, so you want it to run on the same wires. Well, maybe how about then use a different protocol so that then there's no way that you can get from the TCP/IP network for in-flight entertainment and do anything on the
airplane. No, you know, I think they should just go ahead and take the weight penalty of the extra
the wires. That would work too.
I assume that it was probably, yeah, it was partially weight and partially like simplicity of design to have one network. But yeah, it's not very safe.
No, it's really not.
So Roberts did not respond to Ars Technica's request for comment, but he did tell Wired on Friday that the paragraph that I just read you all was taken out of context. Now, it may be that he said what you would do. Let's see. He also stated that he used Vortex software after compromising, exploiting, or hacking the airplane's networks to monitor traffic from the cockpit system.
He said he had done it a lot of times, but not – he'd listened on numerous flights. I think he only admitted that one time.
Is this guy going to be
said it was taken out of context?
Is he going to be presenting at DEF CON?
I don't know, but he's presented twice at one. Well, he presented at B-Sides and I think also at DEF CON. And at least one of those was about hacking.
Let me rephrase that, I guess. Is he going to be detained or will he be
will
available
he be able to get
present
there
at DEF CON?
But the interesting thing is he was detained after he tweeted he tweeted while on board a flight. In the tweet, he said, "Find myself on a 737-800. Let's see, box-IFE-ICE-SATCOM? ? Shall we start playing with ICAS messages? Pass oxygen on, anyone?"
No, you shouldn't.
FBI agents then questioned Roberts for 4 hours and confiscated his iPad, MacBook Pro, and storage
devices. Somebody that runs security for one of the airlines saw it and realized
that he knew
what he was talking about.
Their plane than they thought.
Well, the thing is, the article says, or an article I read, I don't know if it's the same article, but it said that he had gone to them like, what, a year and a half, 2 years ago or something, and told them. He went to the in-flight people, entertainment people, and said, "You need to change the default passwords. That's what they are." He went to the other people and said, "You need to do this," and nobody ever did anything. So, honestly, to some degree, my view is that, you know, as much as you want to say a white hat or a black hat, like, there's really no – it's like the real world. Like, there's really no such thing. Like, there's – every white hat has a little bit of black hat, and every black hat has a little bit of white hat, at the least. That's at the extremes, right? So I'm thinking, you know, if you research this, figured it out, you told the people, and then you've been sitting there plugging in for like a year and a half. At some point, you're just going to be like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to do it at least this one time. Just
yeah.
Like,
yeah, let's see what happens. Yeah. After that much time of it, when they've done nothing, like it's just never ceases to amaze me, though, how much security through obscurity is relied upon. And this is after, you know, so 30 years ago, a bunch of kids figured out how the phone system worked and got obsessed about it. And that was all built around security through obscurity. And they learned how to do just about everything that an AT&T or a Ma Bell engineer could do. And nobody learned that's a bunch of teenagers. This wasn't like these guys didn't come from MIT and they weren't halfway through a master's degree in electrical engineering. These were kids at home with computers and modems. And, you know,
not really even with computers. A lot of times it was just analog equipment fiddling with.
And once they found out, they shared it on bulletin boards and so on, and it spread around. Well, now we have the ultimate bulletin board around the whole world. And so the fact that now somebody's actually done it, that's the thing to me, is once somebody shows that they've in some way done one of these kind of exploits, you know that there's going to be just a wave of exploits that follow it.
Another thing to me that was annoyed me about this article was that, or not necessarily the article, but the way I guess the FBI or whoever handled it, you know, was like what they released was, yeah, he made a plane go sideways. Well, that didn't really happen. Like a plane falls apart if it goes sideways. Like
right.
It can kind of list, you know, or whatever. But
you can sideslip if you're going slow enough.
But you can't really make it go. He made it go sideways.
It's like, not G.I. Joe.
I'm pretty sure people would have noticed and probably all died. So that was annoying because it's like they played it up to make it more sound like a bigger deal than what probably actually happened.
And he gave the plane superpowers.
Yeah, he wasn't flying the plane around like the first 2 minutes of me trying to make a vehicle work in a video game.
But then the other thing was that after the flight, so the flight that they detained him on wasn't one that had that kind of system, but the one he had been on that he had transferred from was. So when that plane landed, they went to that plane and went to his seat and looked near his seat and found like the connection box that are under some of the seats. And the FBI is just like, oh yeah, it definitely looked like it had been tampered with. Like it was scuffed and it was like kind of broken open and one of the screws was loose.
We took a picture and enhanced it and it showed DNA.
And the thing is, you know, I mean, even before I got to a later part of the article I was reading, I was immediately going, how in the world could you tie that to him specifically? You know?
Right.
And then later in the article, the hacker guy, you know, he was just like, yeah, they said that. Like, did they look under any of the other seats of that airplane or any other airplane? Because when people shove stuff under there, those things get hit and they get scuffed and they get knocked around. And I don't think it's going to be uncommon for those things. It's not like they walk around after every flight, like putting them, screwing them, and cleaning them, and putting them back together.
Well, I heard also maybe the FBI also put some of their hair analysis people on it. I don't know if you heard that story. Just a related FBI great investigation story, where it turns out that they're experts on hair analysis back 15 years ago. They
were about as skilled as the arson analysts.
The hair club for men people are more skilled, apparently, because apparently there was a lot of like just
make it up
of pseudoscience being passed off as expert testimony. And see, that's the thing, you know, these procedural crime shows, to sort of tie all the news together, they make it sound like it's so organized and, oh, it's a fact and we've documented, you know. A lot of the time what happens is it's circumstantial. So they go and look near the seat and that looks like it's been tampered with. And then they take that and jump to, oh, well, he got through the firewall and he commanded the plane to climb and did all these other things is not really, those don't necessarily follow.
See, they have one of those mats from Office Space.
I'm guessing they don't, you know,
to conclusions.
There are some people who previously had been associated with the show in the past, who if someone like that, if they talked to them and had them talking even just generically about what they found out or how they found it out, it would make more sense. But this stuff where, yeah, where they try to do the thing that, that grandma in Cincinnati is going to think was compelling evidence. Yo, we found the end of an Ethernet cable on the ground near
three
that.
Three skin cells on it
box.
That we matched to DNA.
It had bits of red code data on it.
Yeah. Clearly.
So we knew it was malware that he was trying to introduce.
When we plugged that cable in, we saw traces of red data.
And there were scorch marks from getting through the firewall.
That's right. And clearly this was
so
nefarious.
On the one hand, technology stuff, the details of the forensics are kind of boring and don't make great news stories. But on the other hand, if you're going to do it not for TV purposes, but for investigative purposes. Do it right. You should be able to, you know, frankly, my web server that serves out web pages, I have a log. I have a pretty, you know, I have a fairly good idea of what's happening on the server. I can go look at a particular moment in time and have a fairly good idea of what was going on. If the planes don't, then one wonders. That goes beyond stupid. When you've got a plane that's worth how much money and it's got less documentation about what was going on with it. Because some of it is, the suspicion shouldn't be because the guy tweeted about joking about hacking a plane. What should have been is that a flight where the plane rose unexpectedly when the pilot wasn't expecting, you know, wasn't commanding it to, and they investigated it, that would be...
I'm waving behind
you. Oh, okay. It's like, is that a message? What? No,
yes,
I would think.
Dude, you're giving the signal.
You're giving it all away.
No,
you're,
no, don't ignore me.
You're telling
me.
Them too much.
Don't shut me out.
Ignore this.
Pay no attention.
But, the... So anyways,
what were we saying?
I lost track. But... You know, these expensive planes, if they're not able to keep track of what was going on, you know, when it's a joke tweet is what gets them stopped and not some kind of actual event where they go, hey, something isn't right. If the plane before had reported that they'd had some issues in flight and had questions about it, and then this guy jokes about it, that kind of circumstantial, I get. But just, oh, we looked at his seat and, oh, there was a telltale... you know, jelly stain on the cushion, and so it must have been him, is just kind of...
Okay, Encyclopedia Brown, pull your jets.
Slow your roll, Maverick.
Bugs Meany, FBI agent, is on the case. these stories, the tough part is, of course, for, I don't know, people in studio or highly interested people... out in the world is, of course, they rarely are going to tell you enough, excuse me, to know what he, you know.
No, of course
they,
not.
They throw out that, oh, he used Vortex software to monitor the traffic. Well, wow, he sniffed a TCP/IP network. You know that when you go to Starbucks and you don't use HTTPS, which, of course, if you go to the wrong servers is sort of compromised, that anybody there can do that too? So while you're all worried about the plane thing, there's plenty of other, you know, that particular tool is not exactly.
He changed the background image.
He corrupted four different packets could determine.
Changed the desktop images, and now it's skulls with crossbones.
We've
been hacked.
Ha, ha, ha. Yes. Yeah, you've been hacked.
All the computers in Starbucks are all going, ha, 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 ha.
You paid too much for coffee.
Aren't we glad that there's a whole generation of young hackers who've learned that that's what you do once you've compromised a computer? You make sure the screen shows everybody whose machine's been compromised.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
I've got a pretty good tech fail we can talk about. This just happened today, actually. This afternoon.
You went to work?
Yes. I did do that. No, so there has been a bill in the Texas legislature as it happened 2 years ago, and they resubmitted this year. It's a slightly different bill to allow Tesla Motors to sell cars directly to consumers, because that's like Tesla's, for people who don't know, that's kind of Tesla's business model. They don't want to use third-party franchise dealerships. They want to sell their Model S cars directly to people for a lot of different reasons. And there are protectionist laws in place in many, many states, very strongly in Texas, to prevent that from happening. And the reasons why are long and complicated. And I won't get into it because we'd be here for like 20 minutes. But there are laws in place to prevent auto manufacturers from selling directly to consumers. They have to use third-party dealerships. So Tesla wants to change this. And a bill to do that sort of died in the House today, actually, in the Texas legislature. And it did, let me see, I make sure I get this one right. Yeah, died in the House. So the committee didn't vote on it, and it just sort of expired. This was kind of expected because Tesla, even though they brought their A lobbying game, they didn't lobby as hard as they could have, apparently.
As hard as I'm sure the Texas
Automobile Dealer Association
did.
Right. So the winner killer quote here from this, though, is from Texas State Representative Sinfonia Thompson.
Oh, come on. Seriously?
Sinfonia Thompson.
she's the one that... Craft beer. She's the one that injected the bill after the big legislative changes that allowed craft brewers to have a lot more ability to do stuff.
She killed that?
Johnson... she's gotten a lot of money from the distributors, the big distributors, and so she submitted a bill that said, we're gonna change the law so craft brewers can't self-distribute. Instead of now, it's at 70,000 barrels or whatever it was to 5,000 barrels.
Lovely.
Like, yeah, so this is great. So now she's doing something
else. FollowTheMoney.org, she received $34,000 in campaign contributions from the Beer Alliance of Texas. She also received $20,500 from the Texas Automobile Dealer Association. Sinfonia Johnson, after the bill died, had this comment to make about Tesla Motors and their bill. She says, quote, "It would have been wiser if Mr. Tesla had sat down with the car dealers first." If Mr. Tesla had sat down with the car dealers first, end quote. And that should really serve as kind of a demonstration of exactly how educated and involved representatives can be at the state level, especially people like Sinfonia Johnson.
But at least what you know is if you've got, you know, five large money. That when
she
you
will,
buy Sinfonia Thompson, apparently she stays boss.
Sinfonia, yes, absolutely. Sinfonia Thompson will Thompson. Yeah, I'm sorry, I may have said Johnson. I apologize. Her name is Sinfonia Thompson. She is the representative for
The Montrose.
No, 141st district, which I believe is probably somewhere around Austin, I think.
She's Houston.
Is she Houston?
Yeah, she's Houston.
All right, well. Ms. Thompson is under the impression that Nikola Tesla has risen from the grave and is making cars now. And that, man, he really should have talked to the Texas Automobile Dealer Association.
Well, come on. Nobody thinks that. It's obviously the estate of Nikola Tesla.
Yes, the estate of Nikola Tesla. Nikola Tesla's heirs are the ones who are manufacturing the
vehicles. And if we don't stop him, he'll be broadcasting free electricity all over the state and the... dogs and cats sleeping together.
Mass hysteria.
It was Elon's own fault for naming his company after somebody who is blackballed in real life anyway.
Well, yeah.
He's just carrying on the Tesla tradition.
the after Tesla's successes, then one does have to sort of wonder if naming it, maybe he should have named it the Edison.
That would have been
electrocuted a few elephants, you know. I guess killed them with carbon monoxide.
Yeah, but then he would have had to have stolen all of the car technology from some other company. I read that earlier today, and I was like, I knew this bill wasn't really going to go this year, and I was really like kind of steeling myself for it. But when she was all like, would have been wiser if Tesla had sat down with a car dealer.
That's a hell of a quote.
Come on, man.
The fascinating thing is the legislature that, you know, really likes Uber and really likes the free market and all that stuff. It's amazing to see them go back to laws that were supposed to sort of protect consumers from 1907.
Yep. Well, this is the same deal, right? I mean, originally the point of not letting car manufacturers sell to dealers was to prevent the manufacturers not allowing to sell to the public, forcing them to sell through franchise third-party dealers was to prevent the car manufacturers from colluding on pricing and screwing consumers over. I mean, the laws have very real, very, very, you know, real purposes that make a lot of sense. The problem is that over the, you know, the past 40 years, everything is, the purposes have kind of gone away and it's been inverted. Now they're firmly protectionist laws that prevent, stifle competition. They prevent people from buying.
Those people have spent a ton of money on lobbying to maintain their position.
Which they do.
They make enough profit by their protected position with the laws.
So, I mean, one argument is that by propping up the franchise system, money is circulated through local businesses instead of going to big auto manufacturers in faraway lands.
Auto.
Which sort of makes sense. However, the majority of these local small car dealerships are enormously profitable businesses that are making millionaires out of people.
Yeah, there's a reason that half the football teams around are owned by guys who had car dealers.
Well, in the craft beer world, most of the distributors are actually subsidiaries of the largest breweries.
yeah, exactly.
So they're not the same company, but they're subsidiaries, which is, I guess you can get away with it that way. And even like some of the ones that aren't like the big ones that everybody knows, like because their name pretty much matches or is similar, even those are actually still subsidiaries of the big companies. So hardly any independence.
I should probably add here that, so there's this legislation. You can't buy a Tesla directly from Tesla in Texas. That doesn't actually make it impossible to buy one of these cars. In fact, it doesn't really make it even particularly difficult. You just purchase it as an out-of-state vehicle, and they deliver it to you, and it's really nice. And
you have to pay sales tax.
You do have to pay pay the sales tax up front, which on a car that expensive can be a pretty big ding. But at the same time, it's not like you can't buy a Tesla. They're selling
a
ton of them here.
The downside is there's no place to take it to get service.
Yeah, there is. They have service centers. They have service center in Houston, and they have one in Dallas, I think. They don't have one in San Antonio where you are, but there is one in Houston. The difficulty with it, I know we're getting close to the top of the hour. I'll make this very fast. The difficulty is you can't call the service center in state to arrange service because they're not allowed to sell you service. If you are a Tesla Model S owner and you have to have your car serviced, you have to call the Tesla main office in California, and they have to call the service center and arrange it for you. And when you go there, it becomes this game of telephones. Like you drive to the service center and you're standing you're the service center guy and I'm the customer. I have to pick up the phone and call California and they have to call you. And it's like, I need my whatever repair. But like I said, it just adds hoops. It doesn't make it impossible. And this whole thing is just ridiculous. And I'm done now. Sorry.
Damn it. Yeah. All right. So the music tells us that it's time to take our break for the top of the hour. So we're going to take a break for the top of the hour. You're listening to Technology Bites here on KPFT Houston 90.1 FM. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Lee.
And we're gone for a few minutes, but we'll be right back.
This is Sonali Kohatkar. The Pacifica Radio Archives is the oldest collection of public radio programming in the United States. Within its walls, you'll find a vast collection of voices like Malcolm X, Noam Chomsky, Langston Hughes, Alice Walker, Paul Robeson, Howard Zinn, Gore Vidal, June Jordan, James Baldwin, Jermaine Greer, and many, many others. Visit the new user-friendly website at www.pacificaradioarchives.org, where you can hear samples from our collection in our new Listening Salon section. And you can now order your favorite programs on CD and cassette. Once again, that's www.pacificaradioarchives.org. This is Sonali Kohatkar for the Pacifica Radio Archives.
Hi, I'm Chris Daniel. your Harris County District Clerk, firefighters head into burning buildings while everyone heads out. Police officers put on protective vests each day at work. Members of the military are stationed in harm's way. What do they all have in common? They serve when called upon. Everyday folks like yourselves are called upon to occasionally perform a different role, jury service. A key principle of our nation is that our Constitution guarantees the right to be tried by the impartial jury. The Founding Fathers wisely understood that questions of liberty ought to rest with average citizens, not the government or one official. With people like you and your neighbors on juries, justice can be done. In a big city, you can easily start thinking, I'll just let the other guy across town go in for jury service. Nobody will miss me if I don't come. But here in Texas, we expect people to pull their own weight. When you get tapped on the shoulder, please honor the call to jury service. My name is Chris Daniel, your Harris County District Clerk, and I look forward to seeing you at the courthouse.
This is KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston, and now...
Welcome to Barrett Time. Barrett
Hey,
time.
Barrett. What's happening?
I'm in Italy.
Hey, I'm on a motorcycle.
Barrett Time.
Isn't it funny that we have the same odds of getting a Barrett Time?
No, I was thinking about it, but then I decided to not do one.
It got windy. I couldn't do it. I broke another keyboard and a screen. I cut my fingers up on my phone. The blood. Okay.
No, I just decided not to.
That's probably if it, that's the brutally honest.
Was gonna, then didn't.
So, well, instead of Bear Time, we do have some Apple stuffs.
Bites.
A couple quick
Apple.
Things. One, here's a rumor that's dead. Kill it. Put a stake through its heart. Apparently, you know, there were the rumors about Apple having a TV set, a full-on TV set. Apparently, though, if Apple was looking
smug. We got
smug
good news
recently,
and bad news on that.
If Apple was looking smug every time somebody asked them about the TV or had rumors about it, that's because they canceled it more than a year ago. So they knew they weren't going to do it, and they left it out there. You just, some of it you wonder, did they like. Maybe use it to sort of figure out where some of the leaks happen, or
well, maybe they you know they also enjoyed pushing some of the other TV manufacturers to make leaps and strides to try to stay ahead of them, and then they got nicer sets at their own homes.
Well, the thought was that apparently they were thinking about doing a like 4K television, and the big reason they didn't do it is they couldn't find any features compelling enough to make an Apple television set
to make a splash into the market,
right. To make it that much better outsider. Than what's already there. They did consider adding sensor equipped cameras so viewers could make video calls through the set.
Nope, not something I care about.
They wanted to use lasers and smoke to make 3D television.
In the 2000s, they investigated a transparent display that used lasers to display an image, but it used too much power and resulted in poor image quality.
And it burned your retinas.
Testers were blinded.
And there was the whole video calling similar to FaceTime.
Nope.
Which,
dumb.
Given that you can do that on your phone or your, you know, your iPod Touch, I guess that's not super compelling.
It so, also kind of sucks anyway.
The odd thing is that came following comments from investor Carl Icahn, who shared a letter covering products he believes Apple will introduce over the course of the next several years. He's got a big investment in Apple, I believe. He suggested Apple will dominate both the television and automobile markets, introducing 55 and 65-inch television sets in 2016 and a car in 2020. I don't know. I'm guessing he can double down on the car and hope. But, yeah, no TV set.
No thanks.
And that's been around for a while. And some of that is apparently there were, like, television prototypes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
There's studio.
There's good news and bad news. The good news is you were right, rumors. There was one.
They were working on it.
Bad news is.
The flip side is Apple TV. Now when people talk about Apple TV, they mean the little box that you stream stuff through.
Well, that's going to help.
That
some
still is strongly rumored to come out in a redesigned form factor in possibly this June.
Well, maybe, you know what, maybe Mr. Apple should have talked with the TV dealers.
Well, he heard from Mr. Tesla that it didn't work well, and so I guess he... And in other news, and this one, there's a meta story to this that's why. Because Apple announced some new products. Are they revolutionary? No, they're full of stuff that they already had before, or they're different versions. But stay with me. That basically, in case you're interested, Apple announced today, or actually yesterday, updates to the 15-inch MacBook Pro with Retina display and a new version, a new low-end version of the 27-inch iMac with the Retina 5K display.
Right.
Big thing is the 15-inch MacBook Pro, they put the Force Touch pad thing on it.
Yeah.
And it's got little tweaks, like the 13-inch MacBook Pro, faster flash storage, longer battery life, a little better graphics, kicked up the gigahertz on the processor. Both of the configurations come with quad-core Intel Core i7, 16 gigs of memory, that kind of stuff. That's an evolutionary jump. The reason why this is news is that the thought before was that Apple would put the Broadwell chips, which is the current stuff that Intel's kind of putting out. And beyond that, the story was, geez, they're going to put out these Broadwell chips now.
Nice mobile,
and then this
fast
fall,
ones.
There will be the Skylake processors, which are apparently a real jump up from Broadwell, and they'll put those out this fall. Well, the sad part is Intel couldn't get the Broadwells in, so these just have Haswells. And so the thing for you to learn, if you need a machine right now, obviously these are nice, and if they fit your budget, fine. If you're deciding, if it's a voluntary choice, you may want to consider waiting till the fall, because the Skylake processors are going to come out, and that's kind of the next big thing. And after Skylake, it's not like Intel's got something else lined up again. Basically, Broadwell got so delayed that it's bumping up against its successor before they even release it.
Yeah. And Intel operates on this weird, they call it a TikTok product cycle. Intel typically has the next two steps mapped out, and usually there's on one tech jump, there will be a process shrink where they'll go to the next smaller die size, and then the next that's like the tick cycle, and then on the tock cycle, usually they'll do like a refinement, and they'll drop the power, and they'll make new faster parts. And Broadwell was supposed to be the tock cycle to Haswell's tick. They're usually named complementary, but yeah. Broadwell's been taking so long, especially to do the mobile parts, that they've just sort of like dribbled into Haswell, which is the whole new product refresh.
And so if you're waiting now, you know, if you wait for the latest processor, you'll never ever buy another computer, because
it's the big
about
TV
the time
syndrome,
the next one comes out.
It's the large screen TV syndrome.
Frank's 2,000-inch TV.
Yeah. But so there's that. But in this particular case, there's going to be a real convergence. I believe this fall is what people are thinking as far as when they're going to have production quality or quantities of Skylake. And that should be a fairly big deal. So one would think that there will be some large-scale stuff going on with the MacBook Pros, etc. So,
maybe. Who knows?
You know,
Apple doesn't release their roadmap, so no one knows.
No, that's true. But at the very least, you're going to get the benefits of – usually when there's a big bump up in the processor, then they do other cool things. Better video, those kinds of things. So anyway, so that's the that's all the Apple stuff. On the TV thing, it just bleeds right into Try, Buy, or Fry. Did you see this LG wallpaper TV? 55-inch wallpaper OLED display. It hangs on the wall with magnets.
I didn't know that they had gotten to the point that they had OLEDs that were that large.
Magic. Apparently, it's 0.97 millimeters thick.
That's not very many millimeters.
Yeah, I saw the picture of it.
It weighs 4.1 pounds.
The model,
this is a 55-inch.
Like peeling it off the wall.
It's so thin it can be stuck to the wall using a magnetic mat before being peeled off like wallpaper, according to Korean news agency Yonhap.
If you peel it off, does it explode and break?
It looks like it's flexed, although she's bending it, but I don't know how far it'll flex.
Yeah, you know, who knows?
The thing is, they are this might not be a commercial product, or it's definitely not. It does signal LG's ambitions to push forward on OLED. They don't have to have backlights. That's why they can be so much thinner. But they're tricky to manufacture. That's why Samsung and Sony have kind of dumped it. And the other thing is apparently the a lot of the works on it have to be the circuitry and stuff that make it function like a TV is hidden somewhere where you can't see in the picture. So it may be like the deal where it's the extra thin laptop with the 14-pound brick,
right?
To make it work.
It's like a monitor and the computer.
we've thinned this laptop down to revolutionary amounts because we've put the keyboard, hard drive, and all the other electronics in this box. So that's more of a that's probably a wait till we see it thing.
I remember when the Sony OLEDs, when they were out, like you could see them, you know, but they were like 11-inch screens. And they were like
expensive.
$2,500 for an 11-inch screen, but they were beautiful. I mean, the colors were amazing on them.
Well, this was like a couple of weeks ago. Was it Sharp had announced like a 4K phone display?
Yeah,
and it was like a 4K 6-inch phone display, and like the whole internet exploded because it was like this 4K display. It was this big, but like when you actually look at the press shots that Sharp had issued, like the screen was this big, but it like the electronics to make the screen work, it was like the size of a dictionary. So it was like, yes, the screen is this big, but we haven't yet actually, like, we can't actually put it inside of a phone because it needs like this whole thing.
The 4K screen cell phone with special power backpack.
Yeah, pretty much.
Let's see, keeping with that, the screen thing in some more try, buy, or fry. Have you seen the Yodafone 2, which has a feature that it looks cool. This is actually, I think, is kind of cool.
It scrambles
your
words when you talk.
It's a dual-screen smartphone, and it's an Android smartphone with an electronic paper display on the back. And so since the e-paper thing is low power, low energy, and if you're not changing it, if it's not being updated frequently, it uses basically almost zero energy to keep the images, then as a sort of start screen, the back of your phone can actually be useful where you can look at it and it can, show the time and the weather. And, that's the example they show. It actually is available here in the States. You can order it from Indiegogo for about $525. The rear screen stays on all the time. Apparently, it can hold a charge for up to 5 days, the rear screen. So once it's set, when you put something on it. It is the rear ink screen is touch sensitive. You can read text, email, or tweet without even flipping over to the full LCD screen.
Yeah.
So kind of cool screen stuff. I mean, that's going on.
Yeah, but it's running Android, so no thanks.
Well, the e-paper back thing seems like kind of maybe Apple's thing is not invented here concept, yeah, that they wouldn't do it. But that seems that's the second thing. I'm sort of surprised that Apple didn't pick up when Sharp and somebody else came out with the kind of bezel-less phone.
Yeah.
I figured the next iPhone would go to that because it looks really cool. And then this e-paper back thing is another thing that would be a real, of course the Yodafone people would be really PO'd because, hey, wait, we are Apple, oh, look, I got this revolutionary new phone with the back. And everybody
nobody
buys,
has ever
sell
done
a million
this
of them in a weekend. And Yodafone's like, well, wait, what? We invented. No. Because when the CEO comes in with his new iPhone that's got, why didn't we make something like this? Let's see. And then other... maybe Barrett should probably have an e-ink phone on both sides because then it's like hard to wreck. The other, I don't know if you've heard about the modular phones, the concept for modular phones. This isn't that, but there is a Kickstarter for a modular smartphone case, which is kind of interesting. It on the back of it, it's got a sort of dock, and then you buy modules. It comes with certain modules, or you buy new modules that you can plug into it to add additional battery, an amplified speaker, a temperature and humidity sensor, flash storage, even a breathalyzer. So the case, it's like $100, and you can add it to any kind of phone, and it's going to add some of these. Although I guess let's see, do they say if it goes to? Yeah, no, they've got it's in black or white for iPhone 6 Plus, Samsung Galaxy S6 Edge, and Samsung Galaxy S5. So that, you know, if you're an Android person, you can go with the Samsung, and if you're on iPhone, you can do this modular stuff. At least it's adding more features. You don't have to carry dongles around in your pocket, and it's part of the case, so it's all kind of one unit. So thought that one might be an interesting try. And then finally, we talked about the Oculus Rift.
Meaning Lee.
We totally freaked out and lost it over the... well, apparently they have released the actual recommended specs for a Rift-compatible computer.
Yeah, along with...
It's pretty stout.
With final specs for the device
pretty
and everything.
Pretty stout.
Yeah.
You know, if you know... Some of this is only going to... They don't give you enough information. They say you need an NVIDIA GTX 970 or AMD 290 equivalent or greater.
It's about $300 minimum of video card.
64 cores and 2 terabytes of memory.
An Intel i5 equivalent or greater. They give the particular one, but that's 8 gigs of RAM, HDMI 1.3 video output. I'm guessing that might be another piece of why you need the, like, newer, you know, the more serious video card. 2 USB 3.0 ports,
yep.
And Windows 7 SP1 or newer. That's not the, like, most expensive PC in the world.
No, I priced one out, and you could get, I mean, if you're buying, like, ground up, including a monitor and everything, you could get away for $800-$900 for that spec for a PC. I mean, it's not terrible. Yeah.
Kind of incredible, actually.
Not at all terrible.
Yeah, although the problem is from the Windows world, because it's only for Windows. It's
correct. For now, yes.
For Mac, is that most of the Windows world, other than the heavy-duty gamers, when you start talking more than $600 or $700 for the PC,
the hardware, yeah.
They start geeking, you know, start freaking out about the high price of it.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Even though...
Yeah, and most of the Apple world is on embedded GPUs, so, you know, your more expensive Mac won't run it at all.
Right. According to their marketing guy, development for OS X and Linux has been paused in order to focus on delivering a high-quality consumer-level VR experience at launch across hardware, software, and content on Windows.
I buy that. I mean, the most important thing with the Rift is having a consistent... frame rate, and they've announced that the released one is going to have a 90 hertz panel. I forget what the exact resolution is, but it'll have 90 hertz refresh rate. Yeah, sorry. So the key is to have a video card that's powerful enough to drive basically two images at whatever, it's the same vertical resolution and half the horizontal resolution, one for each eye. And do it at 90 frames a second, essentially, and have it never drop below that. Because when it gets a little mathy, but basically when the refresh rate drops below 90, the Rift starts having to do, like, frame interpolation, and when you move your head around, when it's at 90 hertz, the movement is very, very smooth and very lag free. And they've invested a tremendous amount of time trying to make it lag free. So, like, when you turn your head, your view instantly turns. And when the refresh rate starts to drop, when the frame rate starts to drop, what you see in front of your eyes doesn't track exactly with how your head moves. And it can be surprisingly disorienting.
That's called the drunculus rift.
Yeah, exactly. Even when there's just a teeny bit of lag, it can be almost just debilitating for some people because of the way your inner ear works. So yeah, they've tried to have this spec high enough so that it's so that it can pump the frames enough so that it doesn't make you sick, basically.
So if you're a Linux geek, you should probably be working on your virus that just gums up the video card just
yes.
enough to drop that yes. frame rate so that all the Windows guys are barfing from just playing their from playing even the simplest
yes.
games. On the refresh rate, that one of the things that amazes me is, you know, Apple. I learned about refresh rate fairly early on with Apple stuff because the, you know, their monitors were expensive, and to get a good color monitor, PCs didn't really use them, and so then you'd go, well, what if I got a cheap PC monitor? And the problem was the refresh rate on a PC monitor was way lower.
It'd be like 60 hertz, and
you'd
be like, oh, I
and
can't
you could
do
tell
this.
The difference. You could the screen on the old tube screens. You could you could see the screen kind of vibrating.
I remember, yeah,
faster,
I remember right? like when they were first getting beyond like 17 and beyond 17. You know, and you're like, oh, I really want to get like 17. I really want to get that 19 or that 21. But in order to get that, it was like to push it. They were 60, 65, 60. 55. I mean, it was to the point where, yeah, you could see it flickering,
it was
not good.
And it made your head hurt
yeah.
to look at it. And
yeah.
You could start being conscious of it. You know, it wasn't just because it was flickery. Oh. But, you know, but some of the people are using, I guess the thing is they do it for just code. So, and with an LCD screen, I'm guessing there's enough kind of persistence of the prior image that you can do it. Because a lot of the 4K stuff is driven at 30.
Yeah, yeah. If you go get some of those 4K LCD monitors that are cheap,
are at 30,
and it doesn't the latency on an LCD is high enough to where it's not as bad as trying to watch a CRT screen at like 40 hertz, but it's still pretty darn bad. You can't use them for anything, or really anything. You can't game on them. You can't watch like 4K videos on them. You can't really
do
anything.
You can code. I think I saw people buying those as cheap deals to have a lot of screen real estate for coders. So when you're in the code ghetto, you know, where they put you on the long table where there's 10 guys around the same table.
And you know what? That's exactly the kind of thing that like some nerd Linux code monkey would do. It'd be to get like that, like a 30 inch 4K display and put it at 1:1 with no scaling, so the text is like 3 pixels high, and then be like, "This is great. I have more screen real estate than anyone," and like totally love that. Whereas normal human beings are like, "This is ridiculous.
I'm working on 20 different windows at the same time of code." Two keyboards, so that it's like the CSI thing, except
one
he's got two keyboards
with seven hands.
Yes.
So,
there was a. Did you? Are we? We could go back. I've got another little tech news thing. I just noticed this now.
Walmart with a horse.
Well, so there's. You guys know all about the whole bunch of global top level domains. How like now it's not just .com, .net, .edu, .mil, .gov, .org, and
.net, .edu.
I'm missing one. I know there were six original ones. Anyway, it's not just the six original top level domains anymore. Recently, ICANN has approved registrars and registries to go out and do. I don't know how many there are at this point. Hundreds of new top level domains.
You had to have a ton of money.
You had to have a few $100,000 to sponsor
one. And you could do whatever you dot lawyers. Dot
yeah, and there's tons of them now. You can go to any registrar and like search for domain names to register, and like there's all these top level domains like like there's like .inc for people who like tattoos. There's .systems, .io, .. There's all kinds of stuff. There's not
like
lots of
fun
things.
Until you go and price them, and they
some
want
of them are ridiculous,
crazy money for a gimmicky domain.
Yeah.
Thing.
So one of them is .horse, and there was .horse. So you could get your own .horse domain. So if you want to get like I love .horse, then or I .love .horse or awesome .horse or whatever, you can get a .horse domain. There's a horse calendar up behind Flickton.
Rony.horse.
Was this for people that like raise horses?
I think
for
it's for
racing
people
them?
Who like horses. You know, whether
it's
you raise
just whatever
them or,
you can imagine for a top level domain that's out there. So why not
like
.horse?
Get, so like you could go get manowar.horse.
Yes.
Sure.
You can get flicked.horse. You can
get
slacker.horse.
You get flicked.horse. That would be a good domain.
AmericanPharaoh.horse or whatever.
GeekRadio.horse.
I keep screaming tell-line.horse.
Probably was a racehorse owner who thought to do it.
Probably. All right, so So an artist named Jeff Schock registered walmart.horse. And the domain, until recently, the domain, all it was, when you opened up your browser and went to walmart.horse, it just showed a picture of a Walmart with a horse in front of it. Just like, and that was it. No text, no explanation.
So it was basically a visual pun.
Yeah, it's like a visual pun. Walmart.horse, a picture of a Walmart with a horse in front of it. Well, Walmart was, as they usually are,
brand confusion.
Walmart was not
amused.
We sell
horse in the meat department.
They're so full of humor that they got it immediately.
Walmart was not amused. They sent this fellow a cease and desist letter, and they were basically like, "We're a Walmart. And you're not.
And we're not horse.
we're not horsing around."
You're going to find the horse's head in your bed.
Yeah.
So they
sent this fellow a cease and desist letter and basically said, you're infringing on our trademark. You know,
which kind of he is.
Although when you show it to the judge and he laughs, then you have just done parody and you're protected.
So did he send back a link to a URL of sosumi.horse?
Well, initially, he didn't. He chose to not respond to their cease and desist letter. Actually, that's not true. He wrote back to their cease and desist letter saying that... that his Walmart.horse site was an obvious parody and therefore protected under like international copyright law and the Constitution and everything else, because parody and satire are protected. You can use trademarks, you can use service marks, you can use fair use sized snippets of copyright in order to do parody and satire.
Was the horse wearing a Walmart greeter vest?
No, but it could have been. Walmart, having more lawyers than this guy did, decided that it was going to take it to the next level. So Walmart filed a dispute with WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization, filed the kind of dispute that's normally used to combat cyber squatting, which is where someone maliciously registers a domain with a trademark in it for the purpose of, like, exploiting that, basically, for the purpose of selling the domain back for money. Saying, like, I registered... They were alleging, basically, that the guy was like, I registered Walmart.horse.
I'm pretending to be Walmart for horses.
No, it's not that. Usually
or
it's
you
so
can
that,
buy it from me for $1 million.
You can buy your right. Walmart.horse domain back for me for some big horse bucks. and the guy, at that point, gave up. He turned the domain over to Walmart because... actually initiating a fight in WIPO and like going through the formal legal procedures would have been costly
and not worth the joke
at that point.
I don't
point.
Know, because he should have tried Kickstartering or Patreon or one
if
of those
it,
to see if
it
people
was,
see how many people on the internet would have thrown him $20.
If it was me, I don't know what I would
to
do.
To go to the WIPO thing in wherever Geneva or wherever they have their deal.
Tell
and
me
sit
he,
across the table from 40 Walmart lawyers.
Tell me he went and then registered Sam's.horse.
No, he registered Rip.horse and now has posted a picture of a horse skeleton on it. If it were me, I don't know what I would do. If it was something that I was doing for work, I don't know, maybe I could get work to, like, pay for a lawyer. But if it was just me, I don't know, man. I mean, people don't realize how expensive this kind of stuff is. Even if you, like, take to Kickstarter and raise $100,000, I'm
that'll,
making
that'll last
that number
you about
up.
3 minutes.
Yeah, that may not be enough when you're dealing with, because Walmart and any, I mean, I don't mean to single out Walmart. I think this is a tactic engaged in by any organization that has the ability and money to do so. Well, the advantage is to just draw it, whatever it is, out for as long as possible.
It's called a SLAPS.
Yeah, strategic lawsuit against public participation. To just draw out the proceedings as long as possible. Keep doing discovery. Keep doing whatever.
The one
just
who has
to,
the most money wins.
Yeah, and whoever has, and then the small guy just gets, you know, essentially just waited out. And outspent.
Well, and if he ever doesn't show up, then the judge basically, you know, usually then they rule against the person who can't afford to send lawyers over and over again to 20 different hearings.
You need
or
to check real quick and see if geekradio.horse is registered.
You know, speaking of the new TLDs, you know, there was the one that is .sucks.
Yes, I've been
following
and
they're
that.
Like really, really expensive to buy. One
and
of
they
those
made
domains.
A fortune with all the celebrities, and I'm sure Walmart owns a variety of .sucks domains.
No, the .sucks domains is being administered by a registry called Vox Populi, and they are charging up to $2,500 per domain. Now, they're doing due diligence, so like...
I think they marketed it, though, to, like, celebrities.
If you wanted to buy Walmart.sucks, for example, they wouldn't let you because you are not Walmart. So at least for this initial period, they're favoring the trademark holders with the .sucks domains. And their thinking is that $2,500 for a domain is probably within most companies' marketing budgets, and it's probably worth that to, like, be able to control your brand and not have your .sucks domain out there for other people to use. So it's kind of a sneaky, dirty play, right? You know, you can price these domains so that they're really too expensive for normal people to buy, but any company with a marketing department is going to be able to blow $2,500. That's like noise-level expense.
Yeah, I want to start my Kickstarter for sucks.sucks.
Sucks.sucks.
Or .sucks.sucks.
I think, at least I think right you now. Buy really sucks. And then you subsell under really sucks for, like, you know, $1,000.
Just FYI, geekradio.horse is currently available if anybody wants to pick that up. Looks like
our lawyers are all on lunch break, I think.
What are those horse domains running the quarter mile?
Ooh. Well, the value of a top-level domain, I think, diminishes as more top-level domains become available.
Yeah.
The glory is still in a .com or a .net or a .org. You know, once you start talking about .whatevers, they're clever, they're cute, but it doesn't have that same kind of instantaneous find me. Now, I know that if I'm going to look up Cthulhu or Walmart or whatever, the top-level domain, I'll probably find something relevant to that company. Once you start going into .biz and .all the other stuff, it doesn't...
.biz always felt sort of
slimy.
You see a lot of .io, especially in like programming projects online. .io has turned into a really hot one because .io is like input-output, so a lot of geek projects will take a .io
domain. Is that
one
of those
domain.
Country TLDs that just happened to be...
I don't know who
.io
was.
I
remember there was
.tv,
was Tuvalu or
well, there
Tuvalu
was,
or whatever.
The best one was... .ly, which is like Owly and a bunch of them, because it's an adverb, but it was Libya. So it's like, do you really want Libya controlling your domain?
Yes.
Well, I always thought that top-level domains, though, would be a good way to kind of regulate internet access, because I always thought if you could make a case for taking all the pornographic websites and saying, okay, you're
dot... A lot of people wanted a dot triple X.
Sex or dot triple X or whatever. But you don't get to be a dot com. You don't get to be a whitehouse.com or whatever. You have to go XXX. And the filtering on that would be super easy to be able to say, okay, I'm going to keep my family from seeing anything pornographic. It would be a crime to have anything pornographic posted as a dot com. And you could then just say, okay, that's over there. It's not... you know, keeping those people from advertising or promoting their product, but it gives you, the consumer, a way to filter what you're going to get.
Be a good idea.
Your ISP would basically, instead of having to filter against all the websites in the world,
just not support that
TLD. So they don't, right now, you know, basically like a .com, if somebody hasn't visited, you know, Cthulhu.com or whatever recently at your ISP, then they don't have it a record and have it cached. So then they check at the top level to find out, well, what's the address for this? And if you make it where it just won't even check, it basically says we don't do that.
It's done, and you don't have it in your. It's like recreating Usenet. You know, like some of the Usenet systems wouldn't grab the alt feeds.
Carry the alt feeds.
Yeah.
Which is dumb, because that's where the real internet was.
So you don't have to worry about saying, oh, well, no, we just won't do any with it. You can make it where they can't even find the IP address of it.
We can even make it so that you stand up a DNS server and say, this is our family safe DNS.
Right, you point it to the family safe DNS, yeah.
Right.
And so then it's – and so that's easy and quick, and
– it becomes a value add for the ISP.
They're already doing that. Except it takes a whole lot more work.
Right, it takes a lot of effort to go.
It takes a lot of work.
Well, they have basically a blacklist.
Like OpenDNS,
but even if you're saying if you advertise, as, you know, I know a couple of ISPs tried to advertise as family-friendly ISPs, but then your liability on that is if you say I'm going to prevent your kids from seeing pornographic images.
That's a tall order.
And then a pornographic image comes through, then you're liable. So there, you could be sued by that. By that customer.
That sounds very similar to if you've read up about YouTube Kids. Google put up a thing that was supposed to be kid-friendly YouTube stuff. Well, apparently there's videos on there of Bert and Ernie with new dubs using language that the kiddies aren't happy about, and so they're getting complaints.
Well, the kids are probably happy. But
the kids are laughing, probably, but the parents are not amused. The kind of parents who really, really care about that stuff are... They're kind of the Walmart of parents.
But see, then that's where you start having people start trying to misapply the First Amendment. And they say, well, the government's, you know, because they're restricting our freedom of speech and expression.
What are the first three words of the First Amendment? Congress shall make.
Right.
Not you shall make or some company shall make. Congress shall make no law.
You can say whatever you want. Just don't say it in my living room.
YouTube should say, okay, well, we'll refund every penny you've paid us for access to all these videos. But, you know, because, yeah, there's nothing like people who you say it's family friendly and it's free who don't, you know, they go nuts. All it should take is putting in the complaint to take down this video that's a problem. And presumably, you know, Google is not like some other company that's going to go, yeah, you tell us every individual one. You know, they're going to look at that. And if they're trying to put together a family-friendly product, they're going to...
I think they're a lot better about that than they used to be a number of years ago. When...
Yeah. Yeah, they've gotten smacked down a few times by Europe and stuff.
Yeah.
But now, they pretty much... You know, if they're going to put out a family-friendly YouTube, if you found something that's not appropriate and you report it, you would assume that Google in particular is going to look at, is there other stuff like this to get rid of and improve the product. But of course the media approach to this is, no, we're going to highlight the complainers and put them up on there and make it a bigger deal than it really is, because then you just wonder how many kids, because those videos, I don't know how many views they were getting before, but when they embedded the Bert and Ernie video in the article talking about the problems, I'm sure a lot more people watched it than were going to before. So.
I've seen some of those Bert and Ernie videos, and honestly, they are hilarious.
Bert is evil. Remember at September 11th, that was my favorite thing, was there was a goofy group that had their theory was that Bert was like the evil genius behind everything. And so they had pictures of Bert, the Bert puppet, with evil people throughout history, including Osama bin Laden. And so there was like this big protest in Pakistan, and they had like these big color posters of Osama bin Laden with Bert on him, and that's what started people. Half the people had never heard of it, and then they're watching on, you know, the news, and there's this protest. Why is Bert in the picture with Osama bin Laden?
Bert is evil.
Because they just printed it out. It was a beautifully printed poster, and there's Osama and Bert and
evil.
So they got their viewers up. Their viewership went way up with it.
Oh, I didn't realize this, but apparently if you're a Diablo 3 player, in honor of the game's third anniversary, Blizzard is the game manufacturer behind Diablo 3, they're going to be releasing a cowpocalypse inside of the game. It's kind of a big in-joke if you're a longtime Diablo player of the Diablo series. From today until dusk on May 21st, players can find secret portals that will take them to a level filled with cows. It's kind of funny. I've been playing those games for a long, long time. I think the first one came out in 97, and there's always been in-jokes involving cows throughout the game, so this is kind of neat. I know if there's anybody out there playing Diablo 3, like my dad, if you're listening, go pop on and play some Diablo 3 and find some cow portals.
But first, make sure, and when you want to put up all the spoilers, put them up at Diablo3.cows.
Diablo3.horse?
Isn't there .cow?
I don't know. There might be. There's a .... There's dot all kinds of stuff.
Well, imagine if you made your TLD was obscene by definition. No, how would that work?
That's dirty.
Would you be able to advertise it?
It's dirty. Don't even say it. It's just naughty Peter.
Well,
naughty Peter.
Naughty Peter.
Yeah, that's my TLD.
Isn't that some kind of German thing? Strudel Peter or something?
I think there's a version of Krampus
called Dirty Peter. Yeah, there is. Black Peter.
Black Peter.
Black Peter.
Schwarze Peter.
So,
we're all over the place.
Anyways, dot Naughty Peter. That would be a great top-level domain.
Ew.
Automata
Peter. Family friendly.
It's not friendly at all. It's not fun at all.
All right. Well, I guess it's time for... And then he misclicks.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious...
Yeah, and I have some ideas for the other sound science things, which we should have within the next week or two. Science. I thought to do them over the pledge drive, but I didn't get to them. Sorry. Here's a shield. Shields up. I didn't get a chance coming over before I came over to get the Star Trek. That would have been the perfect lead into this article, where they've built a powerful magnetic shield that they're going to use to test the limits of physics.
Are we going to change the laws of physics, Captain?
I kind of go no faster. The standard model of physics, as good as it gets, has gaps. It can't really explain dark matter, gravity, or the imbalance between matter and antimatter. So German researchers have a new tool that could plug some of these holes. They've developed a magnetic shield whose several layers of nickel-iron alloy are 10 times more effective than the previous best, creating a magnetic field that's so low and consistent that it actually beats the average ambient field in space.
I didn't even know there was an average ambient magnetic field in space.
That will let scientists measure particles with such a high level of precision that they could detect previously unknown physics behavior and set the groundwork for finding new particles. Basically, it's a complement to accelerators like the Large Hadron Collider, but rather than smash particles together, it'll help find subtle deviations from the norm.
I just like smashing particles.
Basically, it's
together.
Like the super quiet room.
I just want to smash particles.
The shield could prove its worth relatively quickly. One upcoming experiment, for example, will test the distribution of charges in a xenon isotope. If the distribution doesn't match what the standard model predicts, that could be a clue to the existence of an unknown particle. There's no guarantee that the technology will upend physics as we know it, but it could at least challenge some of our common assumptions. But will it tell us if we're living in a hologram? That's
no.
My question.
We will call the unknown shield. Particle Bob. The Bob particle.
Imagine their experiment is making a shield that would that if we're in a hologram, it'll block the function of the three-dimensional hologram.
We never left the holodeck, Peter.
I thought we turned it on, but I don't remember. Click.
We're all living in a hologram, then it's a dumb hologram.
And,
I want to get out.
You know, there's not. We've got the. You know, we have the self-driving cars, which are seem to always be a few years away. It's still prototypes and all that. And so we, you know, we don't have flying cars. I think somebody crashed their flying car in Europe this past week,
ruining it for everyone.
On the sci-fi front, though, they launched. I think they launched it. It was supposed to launch today. An Atlas V booster to carry some wild stuff into space. Apparently in the nose cone will be the X-37B. That sounds science fiction-y. An uncrewed reusable orbital vehicle classified.
That's the
secret
CIA
space
thing.
Plane.
Yeah,
thing,
that's the
right?
one we don't know about.
This time, though, the X-37B will be sporting a Hall thruster, a propulsion system that uses electrically accelerated noble gas instead of burning rocket fuel. Or to put it another way, it's a secret space plane with an ion drive.
Ooh.
That sounds science fiction-y. Behind that, in the Atlas, it will have a package of CubeSats, small, flexible mission satellites designed for customization with experiments and other space-bound payloads.
Neato.
It has a plasma. Some of the packages include a plasma propulsion system, another ion drive, some communications equipment, and an idea from science fiction's golden age that could reinvent space travel. It's a solar sail. Bill Nye the Science Guy is involved in it.
Oh, I saw he's doing a Kickstarter right now. I think right.
Yeah, but I thought there was some. I think that's to take this to the next.
Okay.
The next step. The deal is that, you know, for spaceships, fuel is heavy and expensive. You know, you got to haul that with you, and if you're going to go on a long trip. So what a solar sail does is basically uses the particles, the subatomic particles called the solar wind, to push against the sail. So it's got to be enormous to basically catch enough, you know, because you're talking about not even atoms. You're talking
protons.
Subatomic particles.
It's protons.
So they don't have a lot of push. It's not like one of them is going to get you going. But if you have this huge area, obviously you get a lot of them, and that energy would push you along. The CubeSat in question is called LightSail A. Comes from a Planetary Society project funded by the crowd. If it's successful, it could lead to more missions beyond the solar system and put more endurance behind orbital projects closer to home. Because, of course, you could, like, add that to one that's fueled to, like, get out of Earth's gravity well, etc. LightSail's computer brain will come alive 15 to 20 seconds after the CubeSat separates from the rocket into orbit. But these sails won't deploy until 28 days later, and then we will all turn into zombies.
That's awesome.
To give ground control enough time to identify radio signals from the craft.
From zombies.
Once they get a lock, they'll be able to guide people's eyes to where the satellite will be when the sails unfurl. So that should be cool.
Zombies.
A timer will start the process of burning through super thin wires that release four spring-hinged solar panels from the satellite's side. This little cube thing. This exposes the compartments where the solar sail material is stashed. Because, see, the thing's got to unfold and get... You know, you got to get the sail out there and not have the wires tangle up. And of course, there's not, you can't send the janitor out there with a broomstick to unknot it if it doesn't work. But so basically, it's going to spring open these solar panels, and then it'll have a drive motor will kick into gear, and the four booms unfold. And at the end of each is a clasp that hooks onto a triangle shaped section of the solar sail material. This isn't a huge project. The sail will be 8 meters from corner to corner, which is that's not tiny, but it's like 24 feet.
Yeah.
With a fair, the cube thing isn't that big. The sail's made of mylar, so it's like those big balloons and
super
stuff.
Light, super
Kojo
reflective.
On IRC says that they're anticipating it could get up near light speed.
Well, and sadly, from this,
give it long
stupid,
enough, it could.
This article did it. They have this quote in the article, but earlier on, remember where it said the thing about the particles?
Yeah, no,
it says, contrary to what you might read on NPR and other places, this does not work by using the solar wind, which is ions on electrons.
No, it uses protons.
It uses photons, sunlight.
Photons, I said protons.
The particles are massless. Are massless, but
it's powered by morons.
That would be me. Photons.
It's powered by the Higgs boson, which means it's going to sit for a long, long time, and then maybe one will suddenly
thousand points of light.
No, but so it's sunlight, which is photons, which are massless but energy rich. When they reflect off the sail, so think about how much that would take. I mean, that's kind of like shining your flashlight at a car and having it move. In a sense. Brighter, more flashlight.
Well, if your car was frictionless and sitting on a frictionless medium, eventually it would move.
This effect has been understood since 1899, when a Russian scientist named Pyotr Lebedev, something like that, measured the pressure light exerts on a solid object. And then in 76, Carl Sagan was on The Tonight Show showing Johnny Carson drawings of a photon-sailing satellite. So at the first attempt, the Russians successfully deployed a sail from Mir in 1991, and the Japanese Space Agency did it again in 2004. However, none of them has successfully demonstrated propulsion.
Because none of them had Bill Nye the Science Guy.
There you go. So,
he's going to be out there with it?
No, unfortunately, he's staying here.
Broadcasting live from the
I'm not actually sending him with us.
No, they're going to be using Neil deGrasse Tyson as the pilot.
He would go.
So
with Michio Kaku as the co-pilot.
That's why he's not on at 10 anymore. So this is the proof of concept to make sure that they can deploy the sail at all. One of the problems is apparently you have to be way outside of the atmosphere for this to work, because when you deploy the sail, that can screw up the orbit with something that large and out at the end of the booms and stuff. The second mission is slated for next summer, which will deploy its sails further out and attempt to demonstrate propulsion and maneuverability. That'll be basically it's supposed to be identical to the one they have now. And then, but they're going to have some stuff that allows them to control it. They'll be able to spin it to change the satellite's orientation to the sun.
Spin move.
So that's cool. Body blow. So if this one could be cool, you know, the Atlas rocket, just watching the launch, it's got to be pretty cool. And
I would go. It's pretty
big. Them unfurl the sail. Problem is with 24 feet, you know, wait till they get to the real, you know, when they get to one. Imagine if they're doing one that's going to actually really go somewhere.
Well, it's a function
it'd be
of,
so huge.
It's a function of payload mass.
That you could see it. And if it's powered by light, if it's at the right angle, if well, they unfurled that thing, you could see it from the ground.
You'd be talking, I mean, for a payload of appreciable mass that would need to go appreciable velocity, you'd be talking, you know, like massive. I don't know how. I'm sure there's a formula.
Well, the tough part
but
is the
you're
bigger,
talking
the,
miles
the bigger
across.
The sail gets, the more mass the sail has and the more
correct.
Size you have to have to make it.
Correct. That's although, why you start when you read about solar sails in science fiction from authors who've actually done research, especially modern stuff. They start talking about weird carbon nanotube, carbon particles, exotic materials to actually be the supporting structure because it has to be so big and so massive.
So in other words, before we can do this, the solar sail thing, we'll have a space elevator. Because we have to solve the same problems to
pretty
make
much,
that work.
Pretty yeah. much, yes.
That's the other. Maybe. Although I guess you know if the sail concept worked, I would guess if you had a ship that was already like a satellite that was already you know you were sending it out of the you know sending it on a long distance mission or whatever, if you've already accelerated it with chemical fuel, and then you deploy the sail.
Well,
it would keep speeding up. You'd get the benefit of already moving fast, and then it would speed up.
You
faster.
Would, but then you'd have the mass of the ship of the engines. One of the ways that they work around it in classic sci-fi is you'll have the concept of a light boosted solar sail, where you have the solar sail, and then on the ground you focus a very powerful laser on the sail to sort of push it on its journey, and then once it's far enough out, you shut the laser off. That way you've boosted it with light, and you don't have to have any propulsion on the craft.
Magic.
Science fiction.
Oh, I like the one where they just put it outside the satellite, and one of the astronauts gives it a kick. Kind of like launching a boat from the dock. You just give it a shove with your foot to get it
that. You
have to
be careful. That can screw up your vehicle that you're on, because momentum is complicated. You just know this on the international.
I know, in that Sandra Bullock movie, she like did all kinds
yeah,
of physics.
You know, I was going to say on the International Space Station, they have a pair of treadmills, including a new one, relatively new. And when the astronauts are on that thing and they're bungeed to the surface and they're jogging along, the entire structure of the station moves, and that has to be accounted for in the. In the construction of the treadmill and the treadmill's mounting point.
Yeah, and they tried to damper isolate that,
and it
didn't really
can't.
Work.
And my wife actually worked on that, and I've come home many times to hear her talking about like the treadmill meeting that went on all day today, and they talked about kick loads all day long from when the astronaut's done and they unhook. If they kick off from the treadmill, does that affect the station trajectory? And do they need to do like a move, like an adjustment of the station trajectory after they're done using the treadmill? And that's the one they named after Colbert, except no one actually ever calls it that. It's T2 or treadmill 2. They don't actually like no one in the biz actually uses the Colbert acronym. But it was a good PR move.
Wow. Well, it shows that you know if you're going to do physics and you're going to get out there in space, you better know your stuff.
Spaces. What did McCoy say in the new Star Trek movie? Spaces, death and destruction and cold wrapped in silence and darkness. Something like that.
Yeah, they finally imagine. You know, who'd have thought with the Star Trek movies that it would take them two entire full films before they could even start their 5-year mission. It's like the TV show started when they were already well in, apparently. I mean, because they weren't talking about like, oh, yeah, hey, we just started out, you know, 5-year mission.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy starts off by saying space is big. Really big. You just won't believe how vastly, hugely, mind-bogglingly big it is. I mean, you may think it's a long way down the road to the chemist, but that's just peanuts to space.
Yeah. Now what the world really needs is a virtual Douglas Adams, because we're suffering without an actual one.
Could make JB Douglas Adams.
the angry Douglas Adams that we've all been waiting for.
Krampus Douglas Adams.
Krampus Adams.
Krampus Adams.
No. I don't really want to be involved in science fiction or comic books or gaming right now.
Not now.
Not right now.
Not today.
Yeah, it seems to be kind of...
Not here, not now.
Not here, not now.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of political and other stuff gets...
Because you're not the show host we deserve, but you're the show host we need right now.
The Hugos, where I guess a bunch of people signed up with the political
idea. I want to be really
careful.
I don't want to get too deep in this conversation, but yeah.
Oh, no, it happened. A group of people with one particular idea...
Yeah, how did
essentially, to vote in the Hugos, you just have to be a member. So a lot of people joined and voted, and they got their way.
Did you see the hue and cry over the fact that that Mad Max about...
Yes.
That it was too feminist?
Yeah. I haven't seen the movie yet, but I've read enough at this point.
About it.
Charlize Theron...
Visually looks cool.
Charlize Theron is in the movie.
The reviews were all solid about... I mean, the action to it is apparently top-notch and
well,
it doesn't stop.
Spoiler alert. I don't know if
not a major spoiler. Charlize Theron is in the movie and she plays a pretty major role and does a lot of the butt-kicking and the action, and that apparently made a lot of people who were angry because the best comment I saw was from somebody, this got retweeted on Twitter, who was saying the movie is terrible. Obviously, the director has never seen a Mad Max movie before in his entire life. And the director of the third movie
George
is the director
Miller.
Of the first two.
He came up with everything, yeah.
Yeah, there's some... you know, I figured out how these social justice warriors grow so strong. They go strong on male tears. So the secret to defeating these social justice warriors is for men to stop crying.
Stop crying about it.
Then they'll just starve. They won't have any power.
Yeah,
all right.
It's
unfortunate because this was one guy on the internet was calling for a boycott of the Mad Max movie because it was too much yielding to the pressures of the social justice warriors.
Misogynists unite. But and then irony of ironies, what movie was number one for the weekend?
Oh, it was a chick
flick. Pitch Perfect 2. Full of girls.
I've seen that one. I've seen the first one many times.
Not because
I chose to, but
because
around my house,
a lot of females of a certain age. It's amusing. I mean, I watched it. I watched it once.
I did think it was funny,
and
but I also watched it enough times that it might be considered waterboarding.
Could have been worse.
It's kind of
frozen.
It's kind of like Swedish syndrome. I've seen that a lot of times. Yeah, I've seen that a lot of times too.
Space, it seems to go on forever. Then you get to the end and a monkey starts throwing barrels at you. Futurama.
I almost thought that was another Douglas Adams quote, but then there's a lot of, I guess there's some equivalence with that. Well, another cartoon news, the Harry Shearer thing. Should I be polishing up my Mr. Burns and see if I can get a taste of that? Whatever $14 million that he
they're saying
down.
Boo earns. Boo earns.
Smithers.
Oh yeah.
Release the hounds.
Harry Shearer announced that he's going to be playing
quitting.
The part. Yeah.
Yeah. Contract disputes. Speaking of contract disputes.
Hey, yeah. If we don't get our pay doubled, we're not coming back next week.
Well, I think it's a safe bet. We'll be back. All right, well, that sound tells us, that musical background tells us, it's time to get out of here. And that's what we're going to do, get the heck out of here. Thank you for tuning in to Technology Bites. Always a treat to get to chat with you guys. And we'll be back next Wednesday night for more of this. Geek Gathering's coming up in a few weeks. You still got time to make plans. Maybe some of the rain.
Plus, we don't get into that whole Memorial Day week Geek Gathering conflict that
right.
we often have.
Yes.
All right.
It's
yes.
early this year.
Memorial Day.
It's Monday. It's this coming Monday.
Yeah.
It's this weekend.
Because the 31st is a Sunday, so the month May ends. So it's always the last Monday in May.
Right.
Which then you get into the whole first Saturday thing.
Yes. All right. Well, we got to get out of here. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Tap your toes to music legends during the Sounds Like Houston Thursday concerts presented by UHD at Discovery Green this spring. Every Thursday night through June 25th, Enjoy free outdoor concerts showcasing the best musicians from Texas and the Gulf Coast. The weekly Thursday concert series is co-sponsored by 90.1 KPFT Houston. This week, enjoy the music of 1965 with the Fab Five, Picture Book and Friends, and Summer Street, playing the top hits and choice cuts from this stellar year of rock and roll. Expect hits from the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Sir Douglas Quintet, Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs, The Who, The Kinks, and more. Plus, Discovery Green is giving away prizes to the best dressed. So come in your most dazzling 60s attire. Concerts begin at 6:30 every Thursday night. For more details on the Sounds Like Houston Thursday concert series presented by UHD, visit discoverygreen.com.
Go tell it on the mountain. Go talk it to the seashore. Whisper it in the breeze. Say it wherever you please. But it's a secret that needs to get out. So tell a friend that you heard it on KPFT. It's a secret that should be shouted out. From the highest overpass to the bends in the bayou, you heard it on KPFT. If it's worth hearing, if it's worth discussing, KPFT gets the word out. So tell a friend to turn on, tune in, and listen to Radio for Your Mind. Call 713-526-5738 to sign up a friend today. Thank you for supporting KPFT Houston, listener-sponsored radio for peace.